From the KCPW Danker Studio in Salt Lake City, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm Jason Mathis with the Downtown Alliance. This week, the historic Rio Grande Depot will host the first winter market of the season. This market expands the popular farmers market at Pioneer Park through the winter. Joining me will be Allison Einerson, the market manager, to talk about the historic food synergy the biweekly Rio Grande Market represents.
What we really hope to develop is a market district, really behind the Rio Grande and connecting to the intermodal hub. So you have this great modern vision of public transportation meets walkability, meets great food, great restaurants, small businesses that really help to incubate, and also even possibly an incubator kitchen in our hopes and dreams, right. And also a rooftop garden and an event space and lots of great things.
All that after the news from the BBC. And we're back. This is Jason Mathis with Downtown SLC, a program that explores the people, places, and events that are helping to shape Utah's urban center. Joining me today is my colleague and friend, Allison Einerson, talking about something very exciting that's going to be happening this Saturday at the Rio Grande Depot in the Rio Grande neighborhood. The first ever, I guess, winter market in this location, kind of a continuation of the summer farmers market, and Allison is the manager for the winter market. Allison, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you on any circumstance. Can you talk a little bit about what people can expect this Saturday from 10 to 2 at the Rio Grande Depot and what we're going to be planning to kind of extend this farmers market season?
Well, we have quite an event planned. We have more than 50 vendors. We'll be utilizing the mezzanine inside the Rio Grande Depot. If you've never been to the building, this is an excellent opportunity to come and see one of Salt Lake's really most beautiful historic buildings.
Very cool building.
It's really incredible. And so we'll be on the interior above the art gallery. We'll be on the mezzanine. We'll have about 26 vendors inside.
Okay.
And then we're utilizing the west portico, which is where people used to get on and off the train back in how many years ago?
Back in
now?
Train days, back when everybody traveled
days.
Via train.
It's been a good, 50, 60 years? It's been a long time since people got on and off a train there at that location. But so we will be utilizing the west portico, which we are enclosing and heating, even though it's going to be 60 degrees and sunny on Saturday. It's going to be beautiful despite the snow.
Yeah.
Don't panic, people. It's going to be beautiful.
Yes, I think that is true.
So we are we're using a really sort of inventive way to curtain and enclose that portico, and we'll have some nice heaters in there, which we probably won't need, but that's okay. Moving forward through the season, they'll be very important when it's 30 degrees in January, and we are still hawking fresh fruit.
So you're planning, this isn't just a one-off event, you're actually planning to do this through the rest of the winter. Maybe talk a little bit about what the goals are and why we're going to have this new winter market at the Rio Grande Depot.
Well, I think it starts, first of all, with the fact that we have an award-winning summer market.
Right.
We have a tremendous resource in our produce growers, in our farmers, in our ranchers. And, you know, for them, the season doesn't end when the farmers market ends. So we have an opportunity here to really drive the economic forces that will help keep those farmers in business, help keep those ranchers in business, and preserving agricultural lands by continuing a market. Last year we started with pop-up markets. We did 6 pop-up markets around the city, and it was really fun, and it was a really sort of a festival atmosphere. But it was a little bit challenging because we had people moving all over the place, and our customers didn't always know where to go, and there was a blizzard, I think, 75% of the time.
Right. So last year it was once a month, and you didn't tell people in advance where they were going to be. It was a secret,
yes.
And it would just pop up magically.
Right.
A little market would pop up.
Uh-huh.
And this year it's a little bit different concept because it's going to be every week at the Rio Grande Depot.
Every other week.
Every other week. Thank you. Every other week at the Rio Grande Depot. Why not do it every day? Why not do it once a week? What's the sort of strategy behind the bi-monthly market at the Rio Grande Depot?
Well, I think there are a couple different reasons. Number one would be for some of the small businesses that we help to incubate, it's difficult for them to ramp up. You know, they have this plan, they have an economic plan, they have a budget that they follow through the summer. It's difficult to just ask them to turn on a dime and flush a bunch of money that they don't know they're going to have, you know, a market to sell the product
right.
at. So It helps small business people really develop a budgetary strategy and a growth strategy that's mm-hmm. sustainable for them. And also, it would be difficult for a lot of farmers because they don't grow all winter. They don't have hoop houses and greenhouses and the means by which those vegetables get grown. So we're allowing them an opportunity to develop those programs slowly. And also, we have given out a series of grants to help some of our farmers build hoop houses, build solar panels, and sort of ramp up their development in a way that's really sustainable and achievable for them. It's not going to break their banks. Not going to, you know, they're not going to have to go into a lot of debt.
So growing this market sort of slowly, organically, if you will, not to use a pun, but there's sort of a strategy here of slow growth. What's the eventual goal, do you think, for a market like this?
Well, I think looking, pardon me, long term down the road, looking several years out into the road, we have a grand vision for a public market. And you know, everyone probably has been to Pike's Place Market or, mm-hmm. you know, the ferry terminal market in San Francisco or Granville Island. Is that
Granville
right?
Island
yeah,
in
Granville
Vancouver.
Island in yep. Vancouver. So and really most major cities have one of these public markets. And some of them are in the original public market buildings that they were in. Like
right.
I think there's one in Cincinnati and Detroit and Chelsea Market in New York City. So that public market will come over the course of the development of sort of the winter market, where we really look at a destination point for people, for tourists, for citizens, for downtown residents, mm-hmm. for everyone, that where they can come and access these types of products all year round every day. And there will be a fresh produce component. And these sorts of things will work together with the summer market. What we really hope to develop is a market district, mm-hmm. Really behind the Rio Grande and connecting to the intermodal hub. So you have this great modern vision of public transportation meets walkability, meets great food, great restaurants, small businesses that really help to incubate, and also even possibly an incubator kitchen.
Right.
Where people can come and learn how to develop products without, again, going into a lot of debt on a, you know, for a small business person, it's a really big deal to have a place to cook in a kitchen that's certified to develop a product and then get it to market. It's not easy and it's not cheap. So the public market will have an incubator kitchen incorporated into it. In our hopes and dreams.
Right, right.
And also a rooftop garden and a event space and lots of great things.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So what are some of the challenges that we face in terms of sort of executing this vision?
Well, I mean, we have challenges specifically in the Rio Grande Depot neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Right now we have a lot of people who require a lot of services, and that has been a very challenging scenario over the summer. So we have to really work with the service providers to make sure the neighborhood has safety and security. We need to make sure that we're bringing people to the neighborhood, because having an increased traffic there does cut down on the sort of illegal activity and
right.
The badness, the things that keep
the
things that keep, you know, people from coming down to a restaurant and enjoying a birthday out
right.
or something like that. So we have to work with our service providers in our city to sort of clean up that neighborhood in a certain way and activate it and get people down there for good rather than, you know, nefarious activities. And
certainly that was sort of the idea behind the start of the farmers market in Pioneer Park. I mean, I think 21 years ago when the farmers market started in Pioneer Park, it was not a place that you'd see Caputo's or Carlucci's or Bruges
exactly.
on the corner. It was really, really scary. And it still has some rough edges, but I think the farmers market has changed it pretty dramatically in a lot of ways and kind of created this food-centered business, or at least been a catalyst to help support food-centered businesses in and around the park, where you have Tin Angel and Iggy's and just down the street, the Rose Establishment and Palette and, you know. Really.
Exactly. And several of those businesses literally would not be there were it not for the farmers market. Bruges Waffle is one example.
Sure.
Ikame, the Thai place, is another. So there are a lot of really amazing economic forces that a farmers market can bring to a neighborhood. So we feel that the winter market will just be another step in that development. Again, bringing people down to a building that is just insanely beautiful. And I'm really excited for people to come and see it and to walk through the Rio Gallery and to see some of the great local art. And also the Research and Archive Center will be open. So you can come down and really explore that building And you can look up old historic buildings. You can look up your house if you have an old house.
Very cool.
It's really neat.
Yeah. So this is really a nice combination of historic preservation, of local agriculture, investing and infusing a neighborhood that has some challenges and that we're hoping to try to use this winter market as a catalyst to make some changes in this neighborhood. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the vendors who are going to be at the winter market so that people have an idea of what to expect. And we will be back after these messages. Welcome back. I'm Jason Mathis, and this is Downtown SLC. Joining me again today is Allison Einerson, the manager for the new winter market at the Rio Grande Depot in the Rio Grande neighborhood, kind of an extension of the summer farmers market that happens in Pioneer Park. The inaugural kickoff market is going to be taking place this Saturday from 10 to 2 and then every other week through the winter season. And Allison, I want to talk a little bit about the farmers who were there. I think, you know, we had some snow this past week. A lot of people woke up on Tuesday morning surprised to see a blanket of snow, and yet you're telling me that there is going to be produce at the market on Saturday.
There will be so much produce. It will be shocking.
Really?
Alarming.
Okay. Alarming and, amounts and of produce.
And comforting at the same time.
Good.
We have some farmers that have tons of stuff left. And like we said, you know, the season doesn't end when the farmers market ends.
Right.
So we'll have people like Parker Farms there. Parker Farms will have, 20 and 30 pound bags of potatoes and onions and lots of squash. A lot of garlic and probably, I remember last year at the December pop-up market, Mr. Parker had jalapenos.
Wow.
Like
still growing.
Bins and bins of jalapenos. I don't know why. I guess he covered them. I'm not sure. But they were great. And we will have people like Zoe's Natural Garden there. They'll have a ton of produce. I think he'll have some Brussels sprouts and some broccoli. There's going to be a ton of greens. There'll be a lot of kale, a lot of people starting with baby kale now as we move into the winter season because it's such a great hardy vegetable to grow here. We'll have apples. I know there's going to be probably at least three different apple vendors. So if you're already missing Smith Orchards, fear not, for they will be there.
They will be Smith Orchards
indeed.
Coming back.
Yeah, and Riley will have their cider press there. So we'll have some pressed cider and some apples from Riley. We'll have, gosh, is that everything? Well, I'm sure that some people will still have peppers.
You said, what about tomatoes? Because that seems to me to be a summery vegetable.
Yeah. Wildmatoes, I believe, will still have tomatoes and probably cucumbers as well. And they'll probably be the only vendor who does because they do a lot of hothouse growing. So they do specific varieties that grow really well in their hothouse.
How do you decide what vendors to have at the market? What's the determining factor that you go, okay, these guys are worthy of pursuing? How do you make those determinations? Is it just what farmers are still have produce and still want to participate?
Well, on the produce end of it, absolutely that's what it is. It's just people who still have stuff.
Okay.
And there's a lot out there.
But
I think
all local.
We'll have, it's all local, yeah. Local being, I think the furthest thing away, we'll have some berries from Preston. I think Preston still has berries.
Okay.
And they're from Idaho.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, 200-something miles. It's 250-mile radius, basically. So, yeah, I mean, we start with what produce vendors have and what they can bring, and then we sort of radiate out from there. So we know we want to have grass-fed local meats. We know we want to have antibiotic-free beef. We know we want to have pastured eggs, free-range eggs.
And these are things that it might be difficult to find in other locations, right? I mean, there's something...
If not impossible.
Yeah, there's something special about coming to this market because you can find these very unique... unique foods that are really only available at the market.
That's right. One of those products is the Bagel Project. So if you've been coming to the summer market all season and everybody makes that their first stop. So if you don't get to the Bagel Project until like 11, there's maybe a salt bagel left.
Right.
Or like a Bialy, there's one.
Yeah.
So Rob and the Bagel Project are coming to the winter market. We're really thrilled about that. And he will have a big array of bagels and bialys and spreads and lox and all those great things that you can't get anywhere else because it doesn't have enough. You know, he's just not ready for a storefront yet.
He's slowly growing. And
right. He moved to Utah with his wife and complained about how he couldn't get a good bagel. And finally she was like, enough already. Make a bagel. Figure out how to make a bagel. And so he did. And that's how his business started, literally. In his kitchen, learning how to make bagels, starts giving them to friends. Friends start paying him. And they're like, you've got to do something. You have to do something with
this. Not for nothing can you make these bagels.
Not for nothing. So he did. And that's really where we are now. He's got a really great, slow and steadily growing business. And I see great, great things in his future. So you definitely want to come and stop by. He'll be on the mezzanine. He'll be inside.
Okay.
So also up there will be Julie Clifford, who has, I think, some of the best honey in the state. She has amazing eggs and really humanely ranched pork products.
Mm-hmm.
It's all natural. She makes, we've recently discovered, to the detriment of my wallet, how good her jerky is.
Mm.
Her jerky is so good. The jerky is just fantastic. So Julie Clifford will be there with all of her great products. Also up on the mezzanine, some great locally growing businesses like Lazee's. Lazee's Spreads will be there with their hummus and their mumara and some of the new products they're developing. We'll have Amore Spreads, some great local jams. We'll have a new chocolate vendor, artisan chocolate. They're called Solstice. We'll also have some old favorites like Chocolate Conspiracy. We'll have Tequeños. We'll have some great packaged food vendors inside. And then outside, I think it will really be surprising to people how much produce is still available, how great it is, how fresh it is, how they can really stock their cabinets for the season, getting ready for Thanksgiving, pumpkins, all those sorts of things. It's all going to be there.
A lot of the things that people have now are things that do store really well. So potatoes, onions, squash, sort of those winter vegetables. I was reading the new Alice Waters book recently that talked about food and how important it is to be thoughtful about what you're eating, what you're consuming, what you're purchasing, and how that really does enhance your life in so many ways. To sit down for a meal with your family that you prepared, where you know the vendors, you know how the either the meat was produced or how the vegetables were grown. It not only tastes better, but there's something I think very emotionally satisfying about that, and about that sort of warmth of experience that you can get in other ways, but it's more difficult without that connectivity that a farmer's market brings.
What's important to remember is that we have only been removed from those values for like 20 years.
Yeah.
It hasn't been that long since that was what we did as a society. And now, you know, a lot of people want to talk about how this is, you know, new age nonsense. No, it's how it always was.
Yeah.
You came together over your food. You grew your food. You knew who you were buying your food from. You didn't need a massive Food Safety and Modernization Act, because I can walk over to Julie and say, your eggs made me sick, which
right.
they never would. But you
no.
know what I'm saying? You have that relationship. People are responsible to who they're selling their food to, and they take care of it.
Right.
It's important to them because they know you can come back and say, you know, your spinach gave me E. coli.
Right. Right.
When it's a massive corporation, you know, those relationships are lost, and the importance of it is lost. So I think it's a huge, huge, huge issue right now in our society. And I think we have to remember that it's not nonsense. It's just how it used to be. It's only been really one generation removed, or, you know, maybe two if you're looking at Generation Y.
I mean, I think, you know, as you say, it's like these skills like canning. So you also are the teacher of the farmer's market canning class, and
yeah.
quite militant may be too strong of a word, but you're pretty passionate about canning and making sure people are doing it the right way and understand some of those skills.
Yeah.
My grandma canned peaches. We had seven peach trees in her backyard, and she always canned peaches. I have no idea. At least I had no idea until I went to your class how to can peaches or how to can green beans or pickles or any of those things. And
right.
those are skills that people are valuing again and wanting to know more about.
That's right. And I think they're some of the most valuable skills we can own. I mean, you know, people joke about when the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm going to be fine because I have a basement full of canned food. And then really, I won't, because really it's all pickled. We won't get scurvy, but we probably won't live. But yeah, I mean, it's a very important skill, knowing how to preserve your own food, understanding why it's important, first of all. And the preservation, I think the rise in popularity of food preservation is happening because people are gardening again. So the importance of that relationship with your food, i.e. growing your own food, picking your own tomato and saying, oh my gosh, this is the best tomato I've ever
eaten. Right, right.
Leads you into food preservation, because you say, oh, okay, well, now I'm growing too much. Now what am I going to do? And then that's when you get people in the canning class and you start teaching people how to put up peaches or make jam or, you know, even freeze corn or whatever it is you want to do. Again, skills that really just skipped a generation, and that's all. So my grandmother taught me how to can. I stood at her elbow for, you know, my whole childhood.
So there's this interesting connection between the historic idea behind food preservation, the fact this is part of our history and something that people used to do and are starting to do again, and the historic building that this market is taking place in. And
absolutely.
When people have asked about it, I've said, you know, if our whole goal was just to have the most successful winter market in the planet, we might not choose this neighborhood. We might not choose a historic building. We have some other goals that we're trying to get to by making a choice to invest in this community, invest in this little neighborhood. So can you talk a little bit about what it's like to produce this market, or what you're anticipating it will be like, since it's Saturday's the first one, in this historic building, and the great partnership that we have with the state, who are our landlords and have been very gracious in allowing us to come into the Rio Grande Depot and bring all of these new audiences, this new food, and this new sort of injection of energy into this little neighborhood.
Yes. We'll start with the point that the Rio Grande used to be the place where a lot of the farmers brought their stuff to market. So the train would pull up full of produce,
right,
literally. So we are going back to that ironic history, which is, I think, fantastic. But yeah, we are partnering with the Utah Department of Heritage and Arts. They've been just incredibly kind. And they understand, you know, that this is a totally different use for their building. It's a really interesting and unique partnership. They are willing to bear with us as we sort of bring a lot of people into this building that haven't been there before. So I want to, we owe them a big debt of gratitude, and we hope that everyone will again, you know, visit the gallery, see all the local art, and stop into the research center and really explore all the amazing things the building has to offer.
So coming up again this Saturday, 10 to 2, the first winter market at the Rio Grande Depot, the start of great things happening there through the winter season, and the start of really a long-term plan to change the dynamics of that neighborhood and get to an eventual year-round public market in that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Allison, thank you so much for joining today. I appreciate your passion and your commitment and your hard work to make this great thing happen on Saturday. We encourage people to join us. If people want more information, what's the website to go to?
slcfarmersmarket.org.
Fantastic.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.
Fantastic. And
thank
this
you.
Has been another edition of Downtown SLC, the program that talks about the people, the places, and the events that are shaping Utah's capital city. Join us every Thursday, where we will talk about other exciting, dynamic developments happening in downtown. Until next time, I'm Jason Mathis.